Big show for you here today. Scott Pianowski joins me as Cram Week continues on the podcast. Man, this is a big one today. Look, if you've been tuning out on August, if you've been tuning out on training camp preseason, that's fine. Congratulations, you lived a good life. But there are some things you need to get caught up on. Situations have changed. The Green Bay Packers wide receiver room, there's a new potential top dog there. Meanwhile, on the Broncos, there are some young wide receivers potentially rising, but Scott makes a case for Cortland Sutton as one of the more undervalued wide receivers. How high can you draft Amarian Hampton? What are we doing with the messy 49ers wide receiver room? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ballin'. Join me to do just that is Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy? Have you recovered from Las Vegas yet?
Yeah, I have recovered. A lot of Matt Harmon in my life this month. Ohio, Las Vegas. I guess I'll next see you at the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce wedding. We'll get to that in a second, but man, this is a bounce in my step. It's gorgeous weather today in Michigan, mid-70s. It's September weather, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care what the calendar says. I got to draft just about every night until the season starts, and I'm raring to go, man. Let's do it.
Hell yeah, man. You can feel the football. It's coming so close. Preseason, that's over with. But we are moving into some of our takeaways here during Cram Week. What you need to know, things that have changed over the last month that Scott and I feel you need to be updated on. But before we do that, we do want to get into some NFL news and notes here because it is cut down day. This is the day where the NFL cuts the rosters down to 53. Scott, I was jacked up to see, I'm not jacked up to see anybody lose their jobs. Okay. That sucks. That stinks. But it was at least notable to me that Marquez Valdes-Scantling released by the Seattle Seahawks, so that I am jacked up to see Torrey Horton get some opportunity there. But no real big pieces of news unless you noticed anything from roster cutdown day. But that Torrey Horton one certainly, like I said, fired me up. He's a fifth-round rookie who wasn't a fifth-round talent who gets some immediate opportunity.
Yeah, I think you hit on the key fantasy point there with Seattle. And with all due respect to MVS, I mean, he was just a cardio guy. He had no fantasy value, at least with a rookie receiver. You can see the plausible upside of the unknown. The only thing I've tweeted about with the cuts, and I still have to audit, I haven't been through all the teams yet. I've been through all the AFC teams, but I found it interesting that Deontay Johnson and Laviska Shenault were cut on the same day. So all the sleeper gods from yesteryear are going to be weeping tonight. At one point, Laviska Shenault, was he like a third or fourth round pick? It felt like once upon a time. And I know Deontay Johnson, we've talked about many times over the years. But, and also remember, more importantly than who gets cut is why people get cut. I mean, you mentioned with Seattle, yes, it's a sea change in their wide receiver room and their rotation. Some of these guys will go on practice squads. Some of these guys will sign on with other teams. So if you're good enough to last this deep into the NFL cutdowns, you probably have some value to somebody. It just might not be the franchise you're on now. And it's not unusual that a player who's cut or changes teams late in August could have fantasy value during the season, probably the easiest on board at the running back position. But just, you know, any good fantasy manager, take a good look at the cuts and just try to appreciate what the teams are doing, what the reason. It's not so much the who, not to downplay that, but it's the why.
Right. That's a great point, Scott. That tweet we just showed from Greg Bell there was kind of explaining the MVS release by the Seahawks. And part of it is special teams, too. Like Hunter Renfro in Carolina. Sure. There was a lot of pop about Hunter Renfro at one point in minicamp, and that buzz kind of faded throughout the course of training camp because that's not a guy who can play special teams. Maybe he catches on somewhere, right? But it needs to be a team that probably has an injury and immediate opportunity as a slot player. And at this point in Carolina, they're just more excited about Jalen Coker. So like you said, this is like reading the tea leaves today is more about the guys who stick around and why they got to stick around. And like for your deeper dynasty league, stuff like that, this can be some signal that you find there. But I mean, I mentioned Jalen Coker, by the way, Scott, that's a guy that actually got cut on cut down day last year. And they were like, man, we got to get this guy back on the practice squad. They did get him back on the practice squad. And now he's a guy that is like literally being talked about on fantasy shows, not just because of me, not just because I like him, but I mean, he's a guy who might get some opportunity. So just because you get cut today doesn't mean it's completely over. Obviously, the odds just get a lot longer. One piece of news that we should probably talk about here briefly, Scott, the New Orleans Saints have finally come to a conclusion who's going to be the starting quarterback of their football team. It's Spencer Rattler is going to start week one. We talked about this in Vegas, me, you, Justin Boone, and Charles McDonald, as I was kind of saying that I think Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed and Alvin Kamara could be some value with those guys. Charles, I think, tried to laugh me out of the podcast studio for being a complete clown. You know, I mean, come on, what are we talking about here? Spencer Rattler, I get it, but it did seem like it was trending this way, Scott, that Rattler was going to get the job over Tyler Shuck, which certainly is not great considering they just spent the 40th overall pick on an older quarterback who, if he's going to hit, he needs to hit right away.
Right. Yeah, my joke was that Shuck spent longer time in college than the Animal House guys. I mean, 7 years, a bunch of different franchises. And when you draft somebody like that, you better believe that they're ready to play initially. And he goes to probably the weakest quarterback room in the league and can't beat out Rattler, who, I mean, look, he's only made 6 NFL starts and lost all 6 of them, by the way. Just about every one of his metrics is below code. That speaks success as a lot of parents, so does failure. I still am clinging to the idea that Rashid Shaheed can beat his ADP. I've been scared off Olave because of the concussions, and I'd love to be wrong on that. He's obviously a super talent. I know he's graded well in the work that you've done. Alvin Kamara's gotten to a point where I don't want to draft him. Age 29 season was his 9th or 10th season, something like that. He's never had a 1,000-yard rushing season. Generally doesn't get chippy touchdowns. I know it's a new coaching staff, but how many touchdowns are there to go around anyway in New Orleans? So my stance is kind of what it's been all along. And I wanted somebody to play well in the quarterback room. Obviously, Rattler's just kind of survived this battle more than wanted, it feels like. I'm still going to take Rashid Shaheed at his current ADP and probably avoid everything else here. I think this is not just one of the 5 or 10 worst offenses. I think it might be the worst offense in football. It's right there with, you know, maybe Cleveland and a couple of other teams. So you don't want to draft a lot of Saints. You want to attack them in fantasy. Was it Arizona plays them in week one? There's a great DST streamer, and I'm going to be streaming against Spencer Rattler and Tyler Shuck probably all season. But I'm still clinging to hope with Shaheed. That's kind of my takeaway here.
Oh, man, yeah, I'm definitely clinging to hope with Rashid Shaheed, Chris Olave, especially. Just Rattler is at least worth noting. Gave Olave 14 targets, cleared 100 yards against the Chargers in one of the few moments that they actually played together. Although it's worth noting, Rattler did get him smoked on one of the plays where he did get a concussion last year. So that doesn't make you feel all that good, but that's one of the most highly targeted games of Chris Olave's career. He certainly Rattler will push it. He will push the ball down the field, which is what these two vertical receivers need. It's tough. I agree. It probably is going to be the worst offense in the league, if not one of the worst, but it is a good offensive line. They do have skill position talent, but the quarterback stuff is probably going to hold them back all.
And he took 22 sacks in his 6 starts, by the way. So, I mean, just start piling up the sacks against the inexperienced quarterback. Kellen Moore has his work cut out for him.
No question. And yes, final piece of news. You hinted at it at the start of the show, the Chiefs starting tight end Travis Kelce got engaged to somebody who was a guest on his podcast. So shout out to Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift. They're engaged. Scott, do you think you're going to get invited to the wedding?
Probably not. I've actually been workshopping the song that Taylor Swift might write if the relationship goes astray. It could be something like, "You said our relationship would get up to speed, but all you wanted to talk about was Andy Reid." That's all I have so far. And I don't even know if it's got the proper pentameter. We know Taylor Swift is known for her slant rhyme, which goes back to Emily Dickinson, but a fantastic songwriter. No matter what you think of her music, if it's in your genre or not, I mean, look, every time Shake It Off comes on, I'm going to listen to it. Blank Space is a great song, but let's be serious for a second. I know we're having fun with this, but at least I'm having fun with it. I'll pass it back to you and you can have some fun with it too. 3 or 4 months ago, I was dead set against drafting Travis Kelce. What, age 36, tight end. He just scored 3 touchdowns. I don't want any part of that. But he's still the biggest guy on the field. And there's enough uncertainty in that wide receiver room. And Kelsey's that one of those tight ends who sails past 100 targets every year. Just aren't that many guys like that. So I feel like 135 targets in the bank, 85, 90 catches probably in the bank. the three touchdowns last year was probably the most unlucky run out Kelce could have at the red zone. I mean, he'll score 5 to 7. And I think even the upside for maybe 8 or 9 touchdowns is still there. I'm not saying I'm targeting Travis Kelce, but you might get in a draft room where everybody kind of shrugs where they want the vanity guys, or, you know, God knows we've talked about Tucker Kraft just about every one of our shows this summer. There's people, the tight ends people are excited to draft. That's no longer Travis Kelce. Dare I say he might be a boring value pick at this stage of his career?
I think you could be right. I have him as my tight end 6. He's not in my top 75 overall players just because I haven't really been grabbing tight ends where he goes. So like structurally, I just think there are some receiver bets that I'd rather make in the late top 75, but he's not far after. Like TJ Hockenson, who I have him ranked one spot ahead, is like my 74th overall player. So I do think that that's kind of where you're going to start to look for Travis Kelce. And I'm with you that like Rashee Rice missing time, you know, I had this conversation with Josh Norris and Hayden Winks when I was on their show earlier this summer, that where Rashee Rice wins is that like zone beater underneath. That's kind of where Travis Kelce used to win, right? I mean, he did it in very different ways, but kind of to the back end of his prime, that's really where Kelce was winning. So I do think there can be some kind of cheapy value there. Just it's very boring, not going to be very sexy, but I do think there's a way that can work out for people that draft Travis Kelce. He's probably not going to be like a big ADP beater, but if you are just looking for certainty, I will say this. I think Travis Kelce looks like he's in better shape this year than he was last year. You know, just anecdotal observations from videos and stuff like that. Looks like he's in better shape. Nate Taylor from ESPN now, who covers the Chiefs, he's covered the Chiefs for a long time. He said that this is Travis Kelce's last ride. He's gearing up for what is going to be his last ride last season, and he's going to marry Taylor Swift and ride off into the sunset. Could be way worse ways to go out, no matter how the season ends for the Chiefs, by the way. So maybe he is in better shape and just like more locked in this year overall.
To put a point on this tight end conversation, and let's just take Tucker Kraft off the board. We've talked him. If you haven't gotten on the Tucker Kraft bandwagon by now, we're just never going to convert you, and that's fine. Kraft doesn't count. What tight end are you most likely to have the most shares of when draft season is over?
It is definitely Tucker Kraft. But if I had to take him out of
it, is Kraft for me too. So, but I mean, some people.
But look, if we
you know what stinks, Matt, is that my hometown, my quote unquote hometown draft, with none of us who live in the same hometown anymore. It's an auction draft. It'll probably be Labor Day. We still haven't set the draft date yet, which is, you know, a barrel of monkeys, let me tell you. There's no way they're letting me get Tucker Kraft. They're just going to push me and push me and push me. And I'm just going to have to throw up my hands and say, fine, you be the guy who overpays for Kraft. You know I want him. You know I'm going after him. And they're just going to elbow me out of the way. So I'm going to have a plan B. And so I guess part of the reason me asking you this is selfish reasons. I want to maybe get the Harmon seal of approval, because I'm open to Kittle if he is a reasonable price. He usually isn't. McBride has the Kyler Murray problem. I've talked a lot about that. I'm not going to be on Brock Bowers at his price point. Hockenson kind of strikes me as a catch and fall guy.
Yeah.
Maybe Andrews. I've talked myself into some Jake Ferguson shares. I know he hasn't been a touchdown guy, but I see a condensed target tree, a bad defense, a quarterback I like. So maybe Ferguson is probably my answer. Have you come up with one yet?
Yes. I was going to say, in drafts with other analysts who seem to not want to target tight ends in the same range that I don't want to target tight ends, so they do fall into like the 70s, 80s, even 90s, I have actually ended up with a decent bit of TJ Hockenson. He's the guy that of this tier that if he falls, I'm interested in, especially because Scotty, to like try to win September, you know, I think he's going to get a lot of targets to start the year. They're like trying desperately to trade for Adam Thielen because they're so light at wide receiver. We'll see if that actually ends up happening. But the Panthers aren't like dying to get rid of him either. They can't quite agree on compensation. So again, he's somebody that if you are trying to build that September stronghold, he's a guy that makes sense there because Jordan Addison's suspension. But if I'm wading into the hundreds and I'm not getting Tucker Kraft, I've actually ended up with a lot of Jake Ferguson. I don't want to just go with just Jake Ferguson. If I'm going Jake Ferguson, I also want to come back around and grab somebody at the bottom of my tier 3, which is like Brenton Strange. I think Chig Okonkwo is like top tier 4. Theo Johnson for me is a guy that's like top of tier 3. So I don't feel totally comfortable with Jake Ferguson as just a set it and forget it, ride and die every week tight end. So then I try to come back and get one of those like more upside guys. I do think Brenton Strange makes sense. Chig Okonkwo, Theo Johnson. If you're not just doing the true double stack with like Jake Ferguson, Tyler Warren, or Dalton Kincaid, which is getting harder and harder to pull off, it looks like.
Yeah, I'm in an industry league with really deep rosters where you start two tight ends, but you also start like six receivers, three running backs, and there's a premium for tight end scoring, and I didn't get in on any of the guys you would want. And so my two upside, you know, I'm joining the party late, but I'm just hoping they can pop, were Chig Okonkwo and Brenton Strange. So that gives you an idea of, and so even if I drafted a Kraft or a Ferguson, I would love to back them up with like an Okonkwo or a Strange where I can tell myself a story where they have like 75 catch upside.
Look at that, Scott. We took a little joke conversation about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift getting engaged. We turned it into a serious fantasy football debate. You and I are freaking like professionals.
My song didn't do anything for you, Matt?
Number one, you have some work to do. Okay. But I think you're off to a good start. That was pretty, lyrical. Dare I say whimsical of you to pull that out. So that was good. But you just went right into the football conversation. You didn't even give me a chance to like try to tag team on there with the song. So I guess we won't have like a writer's credit together, buddy, but I think you're off to a good start on the song, pal.
Yeah, you know, I used to adore you. You became somebody I mocked. I know you catch a lot of passes, but tight ends are supposed to block. Okay, I'm going to work.
It's a work in progress, but I think you're off to a good start. Let me just say I'm personally impressed. But the people out there, Scott, they do need some help here as their drafts are rapidly approaching. So let's get into the meat of the show here as we continue on through Cram Week. Preseason hot takes have gotten out of control this year. I've said it a lot. But that being said, a lot of things have changed over the last month. So we're going to try to cut through the noise, tell you the actual tangible things you need to know that has taken place over the last month. That could be training camp, preseason, etc. So we have 8 fantasy takeaways from the last month, situations that have changed. Scott and I are going to alternate with our thoughts. Scott, I'm going to let you go first here. We're going to talk through some offenses potentially on the rise that we have some maybe updates to get pieces of these guys, like where the right parts are to strike. So give us your first takeaway here.
Sure. You know, one of the biggest fallers, one of the quote unquote losers, I hate to use that word because, you know, anybody in the NFL is a winner, but one of the ADP losers, fantasy losers this summer has been Jaden Reed with that foot problem. And it coincides in a year where the Packers spend first round capital, something they're reluctant to do. They've been like the Steelers, very good at finding value picks in the NFL draft, but they go all in on Matthew Golden. And he's become the targeted wide receiver in this offense. We always trot the stat out, right? Since Devontae Adams left, nobody's gone past 100 targets. That's the standard. Lazard had 100 one year. Nobody got to 80 last year. I realized part of that was Jordan Love being hurt, was receivers being hurt. Can Matthew Golden, I realize he'd run every route at Texas. So you can speak to that better than I can. But is he worth the increased ADP? Does the injury to Reed make him undraftable? I haven't pulled the trigger on him yet, even though he's a player I like. And the other thing with Jaden Reed, when you draft him, is you're just going crazy because he doesn't play in all packages. Now, again, that speaks to how the offense is generally run, although I do think Matt LaFleur is a smart guy. So I think the sea change in Green Bay with Golden rising and Reed falling is just one of the most important things to note of what's happened maybe the past 4 or 6 weeks.
No question. You know, Jaden Reed's a guy that fantasy players definitely have been frustrated by, and this foot injury is definitely scaring people off as well. His ADP overall on Yahoo is 109.3. His last 7-day ADP, to your point, Scott, is 121st overall. He is definitely a guy that's fallen multiple spots. Matthew Golden, meanwhile, up from 113 to 105th overall. So definitely a guy, by the way, is rising, but not fast enough, Scotty. Not fast enough. I think Matthew Golden needs to be going even higher than that. I think Matthew Golden is closer to like a top 75 pick than the 100th overall pick or something like that. Because here's the deal: like we always say, we made this point a lot in our session there, our live session at Las Vegas. Like, you don't want to run away from ambiguous situations, especially when the offense is going to be good. This is a good offense, period, end of story. Everything went wrong for this team last year, Scott, and they were still at a very explosive team. They were still a team that was consistent from a down-to-down perspective. Explosive play rate last year, 3rd overall. Their success rate was definitely a little bit lower, around like 49.4%, but that was still a top 12 mark. And this is a season where the quarterback was banged up all year. they 13th overall success rate in the NFL last year. EPA was a little bit higher, but still verifiable fringe, like top 10 offense, depending on what metric you're looking at. And this is a situation where the quarterback's banged up, the wide receivers couldn't catch passes. They were still a very good offense. So we want to attack this situation. And yeah, Matthew Golden is a guy that I have gotten higher and higher on, but he's a good player too, Scott. Like you mentioned the route running at Texas, not a full field player to your point. He definitely didn't run like every single route. I think he needs a little bit of work and like releasing against press man coverage on the quick short routes, but he definitely can win in the critical intermediate areas in breakers that this offense wants to prioritize. So he's a good player fit. And at this point, Dontayvion Wicks is banged up. Christian Watson might not start he's not going to start the season active. Romeo Doubs, there's been like some trade rumors. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but at least I think that Golden right now should be the odds on favorite to lead this wide receiver room in production this year, Scott.
Yeah, and probably the highest snap share also. Hats off to Matt LaFleur. In a year where Jordan Love was hurt and then compromised in some of the games he played, this was still not only a top 10 offense in points and yards, but they improved. They jumped four slots in points. They jumped six slots in yards. So even with Willis having to play a handful of games and with them probably scaling back the things they wanted to do with Jordan Love, what's fantasy about? Identifying coaches, offenses, infrastructures, ecosystems we like, and then draft their best players. You know, Green Bay is one of those teams. As we close the book on the Packers, even though this discussion was about their wide receivers, I want to point out one other thing. I really believe Josh Jacobs is a first-round pick that goes in the second round. He's easy punch for me if he gets to that middle of the second round. And my builds are usually receiver, running back, or running back, receiver. I want at least one running back in the first three rounds, but it can go in a lot of different places. I have no problem with a hero RB build that's centered around Josh Jacobs, especially if I get him at his current ADP, which I just think is mispriced in round two.
16th overall right now, as you said, clearly still a second round pick. Would you rather have Josh Jacobs or Devon Achane right now, Scott?
Oh, it's Jacobs easily. I'm so scared of Miami. The offensive line, Tua, McDaniel lost his mojo last year. You talk about Tyreek Hill not having a long catch after week one. And is he still on the reservation? Is he still with the program, you know, mentally, emotionally? Just reminds me so much of Antonio Brown right now. So Achane, it's not that I'm dead set against Achane, but I feel better about Taylor. I feel better about Henry. I feel better about Jacobs. I even feel better about Chase Brown if a push comes to shove. I want to be tied to that Bengals carnival. So I haven't drafted Achane yet. And it's really the pieces around him that are scaring me off.
2 weeks ago, I would have said Achane. But yeah, now I think I've moved Josh Jacobs ahead and Devon Achane down from like a tier two running back to this kind of group of guys where, yeah, if you want to break ties in favor of the guy who's currently not dealing with a calf injury like a Jonathan Taylor, even a Bucky Irving, I wouldn't fight you on that one bit. I'll move to another offense here that's similarly crowded, but it feels like we're getting some clues here. My first takeaway is that the Broncos skill position group needs a little bit of an update. Not so much in like who we know is the top guy. We still know Cortland Sutton is the top guy. I'm curious if he's somebody who's been in your plans at all, but they traded Devon Vele, who was kind of like a power slot player for them last year. Nice player, older guy that's now going to be playing with the New Orleans Saints. Meanwhile, Marvin Mims has run as like a pure outside receiver in the preseason. I want to bring up this point from Coach Speak Index. I might have talked about it on the show, but I'll talk about it here. He pointed out that last year, Tim Patrick ran out as the clear-cut number two receiver in preseason, and the Broncos cut him. Like, he was the clear-cut every snap guy in preseason. Broncos cut him. So this is what I'm saying. I think the preseason analysis has kind of sort of jumped the shark. Like, not every coach approaches preseason the same way. Clearly, Sean Payton does not. So I don't know that there's a ton of signal in this, like, oh, Marvin Mims is playing every snap as an outside receiver. I think it would be a disservice to Marvin Mims, who had a first percentile success rate versus man coverage and reception perception, to run him out there as an outside receiver. What he does really well is exactly what he did last year. Could he expand on that and add some more real receiver stuff? I think that's potentially possible, but I'm not sure that it's totally likely. So I would bet against this usage for him being sticky, but it is something that a lot of people are talking about right now, that Marvin Mims has basically been a full-time outside receiver. The other two young guys that I think need a boost in this Denver wide receiver room, Scott, and it is a group that I'm like kind of obsessed with talking about because I think they need a true number two, is number one, second year receiver, Troy Franklin, who everybody with the team has said is ready for a breakout season. Now, Troy Franklin in his prospect profile and reception perception, 70.3% success rate versus man, 82.4% success rate versus zone. So you're like, oh, those are really good numbers, right? Well, 26th percentile against press coverage, really struggled on contested catches, and cannot run routes over the middle of the field because he's just like too skinny. He doesn't separate over that middle of the field, which just brings me to Pat Bryant, the rookie wide receiver, Scott, who that was exactly what he was really good at. Running these like big in-breaking routes over the middle kind of fits into that power slot receiver mold. So I'm going a lot of different places here, Scott, but like, It's so hard to put this room together, right? And maybe the answer is just Evan Engram. I'm open to that, but all these guys kind of like have a role, and their route trees all together probably fill in like one good player. So maybe it's none of them, Scott, but these are sort of the updates that I think people need to know as they try to find some sleepers in an offense that we all seem to agree is going to be good this year, but we're just not quite sure like where the value is for these secondary players.
Yeah, I think we're getting a couple of great screened options here, okay? Cortland Sutton, as I look at the Yahoo ADP, I see wide receiver 29. That's a mistake. Cortland Sutton was fabulous in the second half, played on the cusp of a wide receiver one. And actually, Mims was really good in the second half, too. And you say, well, why do you care about the second half? That's when they really took the training wheels off Bo Nix and let Bo Nix cook. Sean Payton offense, mobile quarterback. And it maybe helped that Nick stayed, and it didn't help Tyler Shock, but it maybe helped Nick that he stayed in college a little bit longer, is maybe more pro ready than a rookie quarterback might have been. So Sutton, for one, is where he's going in ADP all summer has been a smash for me. I'm getting him on some teams, on some builds, where he's my third receiver. I love that. I think he's even a viable wide receiver too. He's such a good boundary player. He succeeded even with the mess of quarterback they had before they had Bo Nix. So Sutton, I'm in on. Mims, he's a puzzling guy because his efficiency stats are so great, but there's things that he does that they don't like. They've been reluctant to give him a bigger role. He's been dynamic in the return game. He's a kick returner, punt returner. So this is a guy who needs to get more opportunity. But again, if you look at him over the second half of last year, he was like a wide receiver three. He was somewhere in the top 40. Now you need splash plays more with Mims. He's going to be more boom or bust. I realize you can say that about 90% of the position anyway. There just aren't that many consistent guys, and they're going to go early. But he's still somebody I'm going to maybe place a bet on. As far as the other receivers here, they're second half guys for me. They're let somebody else draft them, let somebody else drop them, and then we'll reevaluate in October and November. They're the slower developing Polaroids. But I'm going to give you a strong buy on Cortland Sutton. And although I wouldn't want Sutton and Mims on the same build, I'm actually completely engaged in Mims at his current ADP also.
It's interesting because Cortland Sutton's a guy I have ranked like lower than that, man. And I think this is just a difference in how we like approach things, maybe. But by the way, you like really might be right, honestly. Like you really might be right about this Cortland Sutton thing, because if this offense is going to take another step and Bo Nix is going to take another step, the leading target getter is going to be Cortland Sutton. But like, because I kind of know what Cortland Sutton is, and again, I'm not saying I'm right. This is just how I do things, but I'm not saying Scott's wrong and I'm right. Scott very much might be right. But like, I have guys like Roma Dunze, Ricky Pearsall, and Emeka Egbuka that I'd just rather take over Cortland Sutton, because I think I know I'm going to get on base with Cortland Sutton, but I think I might hit a home run with those three guys. I think I might have hit a home run with Travis Hunter or Tetero McMillan. So like, that's just why I've ended up having those guys ranked ahead of Cortland Sutton. But maybe that's not fair, Scott. Like, maybe that's just really like, if I'm trying to win the rankings accuracy, I'm probably pushing Cortland Sutton up because he's gonna outproduce one if not all of those guys. But that's just, again, like where I'm targeting receivers there, I just haven't been drafting him as much.
Well, if you're trying to win the rankings accuracy, you just look at what Justin Moon says and just write that down and sign Matt Harmon.
Yeah, true.
I'm going to give a long look to the Moon list before I commit to anything. I mean, glad to have him on the team this year. But in addition to a bunch of really talented people, it's a great staff. I know it's a different staff. And, you know, there's some guys who aren't here who we miss, but we have some really great talent here. And I hope you check those guys out. You've seen a lot of Justin on this program. You know, Sutton had 135 targets last year. And again, that was trending higher in the second half of the year. I just feel like there's a genie out of the bottle here. It may sound weird to say about somebody in their late 20s, but I could see Courtland Sutton getting 145 or 150 targets. And again, whenever they throw a touchdown, it's most likely to be to him. You talked about maybe Engram being an answer. You know, man, that yards per catch, the touchdown column. I know it's Sean Payton's offense, but things have trended the wrong direction. Engram has not been a touchdown guy his entire career, which is strange to say for a tight end who usually they have to live that way. I haven't been tempted to draft Engram. You want to try to talk me out of it?
Not particularly. I think he is the ultimate, like, hey, you know, he's just kind of there tight end. He's the very last guy in that tier that I'm not really drafting from, right? Where I'd prefer to take the next group of guys, which begins with Tucker Kraft and Jake Ferguson and all those names we mentioned earlier. It's just, again, like more of a structural build thing. One thing I'll say about the Engram, though, is that when Devon Vailey got traded, I was like, oh, the power slot position is open. And like, I do think that's in the long run, maybe not week one, but I think long run, that's Pat Bryant's position. People kind of came back with, oh no, Evan Engram's going to play the role. Guys, I'm telling you from an on-field perspective, the move tight end and the power slot receiver can both be on the field together. And if you want evidence of that, go up and look at the Detroit Lions offense where Sam Laporta is the move tight end and Amon-Ra St. Brown is kind of the power slot receiver. St. Brown plays more outside now than earlier in his career, but like 2022, that was what, or 2023, like stuff like that, that's when that was like popping off for that team. Lastly, just to update on the Courtland Sutton thing, and then we can throw it a break here, Scott. You have Courtland Sutton 22 among wide receivers. I have him 35. Mr. Smart Man himself, Justin Boone, has him at 31. So he's like splitting the difference between the two of us. So maybe that's the right answer on Courtland Sutton.
I can tell you why the market is overrating Evan Engram, by the way. People, and Michael Salfino came up with this point. People just like saying Joker. He's going to be the Joker. You know, I don't know. I think, yes. I think whenever anybody's labeled the Joker, their ADP gets a little bit, you know, wacky.
Yeah, there's no question about that. All right, we are going to throw to our first break. We come back. We have another segment coming up on rookie running backs on the rise. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we are back. We are going to continue talking through some updates you need to know that have occurred over the last month or so, preseason, training camp, etc. I'll get into my second takeaway here, Scott, and I'll stay in the AFC West. Chargers skill position players, we got to shake up on this one. Number one is the running back situation. I know that people who are just tuning back in now might have remembered, you know, hey, they signed Najee Harris in free agency. They also drafted Amarian Hampton. Maybe this is like a committee split backfield. I guess, Scott, we don't really know what that backfield is going to look like. We truly have no clue. That being said, Najee Harris has moved back to the active roster. He's eligible to play in week one. His Yahoo ADP has fallen all the way to 130 overall. Amarian Hampton, meanwhile, the rookie running back, 33rd overall in the ADP. He has clearly been getting a lot of steam during this training camp process. Now that we know that Najee Harris is back, are you buying Amarian Hampton as the 33rd overall pick?
I'm still fine with it. And I realize they lost their best offensive lineman, Rashawn Slater. You hate to see that, but I trust Jim Harbaugh to build a running game. I trust Greg Roman to build a running game. And I also trust my eyes and my instincts that Harris is just a guy and he lost so much time getting – and granted, running back is a much easier onboard than some other positions, but I'm not going to let the – presence of Harris get in my way. Hampton is a great fourth round pick, but he's very considerable. We talk about the third round is where the warts kind of come out. And if anybody in the third round, if they didn't have those warts, they'd be first round picks. They'd be second round picks. But I found myself placing a few chips on Hampton. I feel pretty good about that. And even if Harris, I think it may be, even be a case there, you know, maybe 5-6 weeks. And I know I talk about winning September and I'm still going to stand by that. But I think Harris might be a case where eventually once Hampton gets up to speed, he just shoves Harris out of the way and, like, you know, playoff winner Omarion Hampton, you know, Thanksgiving monster Omarion Hampton, stuff like that. We like to think of rookies, you know, gaining speed a lot of times once they get their feet wet in the league. The bottom line is he's a proactive pick for me and already somebody who's a common part of my fantasy portfolio.
Yeah, I'm in line with ADP here. I have him ranked 33rd overall, or like 33rd overall. Kind of a toss up between him and like Jalen Hurts for me, if I'm starting to think about quarterbacks like in that area. He's a good player. He's a good fit in this system that wants to run downhill. Now there are some like people out there that question if he's like a true gap runner, if he can be a high volume gap runner, and that's kind of where what they want to do. But I think this offense is smart enough to fit the run scheme around Amarian Hampton. And I guess I kind of question, Scott, like when Najee Harris or when Amarian Hampton was originally drafted, my analysis was, oh yeah, well, Najee Harris is going to get the veteran deference, but and Amarian Hampton is going to have to kind of, he's going to be that slow developing Polaroid, to use your phrase. But like, you can put up with some veteran deference early and you can reap the benefits later. Now, I don't know, like after Najee Harris missed quite literally all of training camp with an eye injury after the fireworks incident, I don't know that we're going to get that like veteran deference, right? Like, Najee Harris has not been a part of this team and Amarian Hampton has. They might like use some level of a little committee or something at first, but what's to say that at this point, Harris, who's on a 1-year deal, has no ties to this coaching staff and has not been active in training camp because of a fireworks injury. Who's to say that like it's not just 70% Amarian Hampton, 30% Najee Harris right from the get-go, and that would be more than enough for him to be like a running back one on your fantasy team.
Right. And I think we saw enough of a receiver from Hampton in college, right, at North Carolina, that Harris is, he's not incapable of catching the ball, but he's not a special receiver. Obviously, Harris is a thicker of build running back, so you worry about who's going to be the goal line guy. Justin Herbert isn't going to take those goal line scores away. But yeah, Hampton, you know, bottom line, right, it's not always what teams say, it's what they do. They took Amarian Hampton in the first round. I can't imagine they would do that and not line up a really made – they may have moved up in the first round to take him. So I can't imagine they would prioritize somebody like that at a time when the NFL is moving away from that and not have a meaty first-year role in mind.
I just want to touch on the receiver core quickly on this team. I'm glad you mentioned the Rashawn Slater injury, because I think that does have to dock – you know, your projections for this offense overall. I'm not sure like enough for me to full fade everybody or anything, but maybe you bump them down within the tier or something like that. But the receiver room is definitely different now than we expected, because going into camp, it's like, well, Trey Harris is going to battle it out with Mike Williams at X receiver. Quentin Johnston maybe moves to flanker. Keandre Lambert-Smith, sleeper to keep an eye on. Well, Mike Williams retires. Trey Harris, it seems like he's been working mostly at flanker, and Keandre Lambert-Smith has been the backup to Quentin Johnston at X receiver. And then meanwhile, Keenan Allen returns to the team. I'm curious what you think about Keenan Allen, man, because I feel like we haven't talked enough about it on the show. Does Keenan Allen impact Ladd McConkey? And right now, is Keenan Allen somebody you're even willing to draft in the late rounds? I'll tell you, Scott, I'm conflicted on the Ladd McConkey part of this question, but I do think Keenan Allen's a guy that if I'm taking wide receiver 50, I actually don't mind taking Keenan Allen as a depth piece there.
Yeah. The thing about Keenan Allen is he's a single, right? He can't be a home run. I'm not even sure he can be a double anymore. Age 33 season, even at his peak, he was never a speed guy. He was always a spacing guy and a timing guy. I mean, he's going to catch probably 70 balls. It might be for 683 yards, right? Five touchdowns, six touchdowns. Maybe there's a little bit more upside if things play well. My takeaway here is, if you loved Ladd McConkey as I did before this signing, don't let it spook you. McConkey can play, and again, okay, you can speak to this better than anybody. McConkey can win outside. He doesn't have to be in the slot. And they had him producing at a 1,600-yard pace in the second half of last season, and then he had – what was it, 197 and a touchdown, I want to say, off the top of my head, against Houston, the playoff loss, just under 200 yards. He was arguably the best player on the field that day. So I feel like that's something, another genie out of the bottle, where even if this is a team that wants to run the ball and dominate the line of scrimmage as much as they can do that without Slater, that McConkey's still 140 targets, you know, around 100 catches. I think he can get into double-digit touchdowns. And you know, we don't talk about Justin Herbert that much anymore. I mean, he used to be like, oh, like sleeper MVP candidate, Justin Herbert. He's just another good quarterback now. But let's not lose fact of the side that he's a plus quarterback, right? I mean, maybe he's not Lamar Jackson. Maybe he's not Josh Allen. You know, maybe he's not Jaden Daniels. But he's still one of the top 10 right answers at this position. And if, who knows? I mean, MVP a lot of times becomes about team narrative. If this is the year the Chiefs fall and maybe the Chargers steal the division, maybe Herbert would get back into that mix. But the bottom line is, Ladd McConkey, I think you're getting probably a slight discount or buying. He would have been a no doubt second round pick in every league. Now he might slip to the third round. To me, that's a buying opportunity.
So I read a piece for the site every year. It's like looking at the top, my the tier, the players in my top two wide receiver tiers. So for this year, it's 1 to 11. And just I looking at the three pillars that I think a player needs to hit to be the wide receiver one overall in a given season. It's a dominant target share of his own offense, efficient quarterback slash offense, and then number three, be verifiably great at football. Ladd McConkey is my wide receiver 11. I've kept him in the bottom of that second tier. And mostly the reason is that number one, he definitely plays with an efficient quarterback. You mentioned it, that like there's kind of always this debate about Justin Herbert weirdly and like in media and stuff, but a new offense really unlocked like a different version of Justin Herbert last year. He was fourth in adjusted yards per attempt last season behind the two MVP contenders and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and Jared Goff, who like everybody agrees is one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL. So great year for Herbert. Obviously Ladd McConkey verifiably great at football. And the real reason I kept him in that tier two, despite the Keenan Allen addition, 80 and all the rookies and stuff like that, like maybe some more target competition than what we saw from last year. QJ still hanging around. He had an 84.4% success rate versus press coverage and reception perception, which has only been bested by among rookie wide receivers by Odell Beckham in 2014. So great against press coverage. He put it in the box score, seventh among all receivers with 250 plus routes in yards per out run versus man coverage. The thing that I think he does not check the box is the dominant target share of his offense. Even after he broke out in his post-bye rookie bump, he only had a 21.9% target share. That ranked 19th among wideouts in that span. And now Keenan Allen the mix. And like, I don't know, man, maybe I'm overthinking this, Scott, but I do think Keenan Allen, who has chemistry with Justin Herbert, who knows this play, who like knows what Herbert wants, all that stuff, that makes me just like a little bit nervous that Ladd McConkey will just hover around like 22 to 23% of the targets, which then if he's going to be like a wide receiver one, he would have to be outrageously efficient. I already said it. He was outrageously efficient last year, but do you think I'm overthinking it a little with a player that I absolutely love talent wise?
Well, you look at the players going around McConkey in ADP, right? Puka Nacua, Devontae Adams is there. AJ Brown, Devonta Smith is there. T Higgins, obviously Jamar Chase is there. Mike Evans, there's a lot of quality in that receiver room. Buko's been one of the big winners this summer. Eventually, they get Godwin back. I'm supposed to worry about Keenan Allen pushing me off Ladd McConkey when all those other guys are playing with quality players? I don't know. I'm not going to worry about
it. Yeah, ultimately, his ADP right now is 25th overall on Yahoo in the last 7 days. I still have him 20th overall, so I'm still ahead of ADP overall on Ladd McConkey.
Right.
But just that one little note. Let's go into your second takeaway here. The Commanders running back room, Scott, this is definitely something that's changed over the last month.
Yeah, you knew this would be an above the fold discussion point. Brian Robinson basically beat out and then given away in trade to San Francisco. And so what's left in this running back room? And they did that because they like who they have, right? Ja'Cory Kroski, Merritt, seventh round pick. Another guy who bounced around in college, didn't play much last year, but can he be a featured guy? What's left with Austin Eckler? He's somebody who you know well. You used to do a program with him, one of the smartest players in the league, a dynamite. He used to always say to you, hey, reception, perception, you should be charting my routes. I'm a receiver out there, not just a running back. I think he has something left to give.
True.
And Jeremy McNichols, a big back who could be profiles the – I'm sorry, not Jeremy McNichols. Chris Rodriguez, who actually on some depth charts is listed behind Jeremy McNichols, but I think Rodriguez for fantasy purposes is the third name to look at here, a bigger back who may be the goal line guy. So my takeaway has been that I think JCM, the helium on him, or Bill as he wants to go by, it's great that he's become a story, and we've seen seventh round picks pop before. Pacheco a couple of years ago was one of those guys. But I think he's a little bit over his skis now in ADP. Eckler's going to lead this backfield in receiving. I think Rodriguez might lead this team in rushing touchdowns. So my stance has been, I think JCM, depending on the sophistication of your league, I mean, if it's a more casual league where half the league might not even know who JCM is, okay, fine. But in the leagues where people are kind of trying to outsharp each other and trying to be like, oh, I'm more up on it than you are, I think JCM might go a round or two early, and I'd rather just take the value on Eckler, or even the later value, speculative as it may be, he may be one of your first cuts on Chris Rodriguez.
This JCM stuff is Bill Krosky Merritt. I like JCM better than Bill. Like,
we're too.
Let's talk about Bill. But whatever, guys get to pick their own nicknames. I agree with you that I think people have gotten over their skis a little bit. I kind of like where we have him ranked consensus wise on Yahoo, 37th among the running backs. You have him 38. Boone's got him 31. I've got him at 41. So I'm definitely a little skeptical. I have Austin Eckler ranked at 39. So I've kind of like, I'm hedging there a little bit, but yeah, I don't know, man. I just, people talking about like, oh, I'm going to take Bill in the seventh round. I don't know about that, bro. Like that to me makes me pretty uncomfortable. And he's like kind of getting into that meme zone on fantasy Twitter where like BetMGM like made a meme about him and like the Taylor Swift like engagement announcement. I was like, bro, like we're memeing about Bill and he's a seventh round rookie who hasn't even played a game yet. That makes me not nervous that like he's going to fail because of that, but he's going to get into that like Kyle Pitts zone where people are talking about him so much they're getting way too overhyped. I know this is stupid stuff and I shouldn't be hung up on it, but it is what it is. I like I said, I'm just nervous that this is a full-blown committee where like the running game is better than the sum of its part, or better. Yeah, it's better than the sum of its parts. And we're talking about this guy like going in the seventh round. I don't think so. If you're taking him as the 37th running back off the board, love it. I think that can go really well for you, but he's probably not going to have passing down work. He might not have goal line work. And that's the reason we fade running backs usually in fantasy football.
I'm so glad you said that from my mind to your lips. I mean, is he the pass guy? Is he the reception guy? No. Is he the goal line guy? Probably not. And then there's a mobile quarterback here who just ran for over 800 yards. Right. He's going to run for a handful of touchdowns. And I realize player comps, people have different opinions on them. Some people like them. Some people laugh at them. Some people just have fun with them. But on Player Profiler, I was just curious what Jacory Krosky Merritt, what his comp was. And sometimes their comps are pretty good. Sometimes their comps don't seem to make sense. They haven't compared to Travis Homer, who had moments, you know, with Seattle. Every once in a while he'd have like a 5 for 42 game. And you'd be like, oh, maybe Travis Homer can play more. And then the next week he'd be on special teams. He'd have one carry. So let's hope that JCM becomes more than Travis Homer. But again, because he's blocked from maybe third down work, he's blocked from so many things you want to have. And also Washington, probably a regression team, right? They just got so fortunate with stealing the Chicago game, one of the Philadelphia games. It happened. They still get credit for those wins, but this could easily go back down to being like an 8-9, 9-8 type of football team. I bet their win over total is probably 8.5 or 9. It's a good team. I don't think it's a great team. I don't think anybody would be surprised if they missed the playoffs, and they're going to need Daniels to be Superman again for them to make the playoffs. So I think the takeaway here is if you're not getting a price that you feel good about with JCM, I think there are more reasonable running back picks in that bucket.
To your point about them as a rushing team, on run plays last year, they were number one in success rate and number one in EPA, according to True Media, on plays that were a rush. Some of that is Jaden Daniels induced. I believe like the scrambles get mixed into there. So that, again, are they going to do that again this year? Run the table as the best rushing team in the NFL? That is where I'm a little skeptical. And that's where, like I said, totally on board with Brian Robinson's out. Let's get JCM Bill in the draftable range 100%. But don't just be reading all these tweets and be like, I'm taking this guy in the seventh round. Let's exercise a little bit more restraint than that. We're going to get to our next break here, Scott. And we come back, we're going to talk through quarterbacks, New York Giants, past and present, right after this. All right, we are back. We are continuing through storylines that have changed over the last month that you need to be aware of. Scotty, let's travel up to New York together. My third takeaway, Jackson Dart Mania has officially hit the New York Giants, the new rookie quarterback up there in New York. I'm just going to throw it to you this way. Has Jackson Dart's absolutely electric preseason? I believe he is one of the top graded quarterbacks, Pro Football Focus wise, from the preseason. He's one of the most productive quarterbacks in the preseason. People can't stop talking about Jackson Dart's preseason. Has his preseason changed anything for you at all when you're projecting the New York Giants?
Not really. I mean, we already wanted Neighbors, right? We already knew this is probably a below average offense. And Dart, as a rookie who had a profile in college. I mean, some people thought it was a stretch to put him in the first round, and other people thought, okay, we see what the Giants are doing. They're just looking at the upside, not worried if he has no floor here or not. This still strikes me as like a 6-11 type of team. Neighbors is going to be a target hog. We know that Wandale Robinson will be the PPR scam player. I think Taylor is maybe a better running back than people realize, but I didn't make any adjustments. I'd like to see Dart play sooner rather than later, because what's your future with Russell Wilson? He's a placeholder, you know. Tracy, by the way, not Tyrone Taylor. Tyrone Tracy is the running back I'm talking about. So I'm not one of the Scatabo bros, but the Giants are still who I thought they were. I want to see Dart play, but he's going to have ups and downs. He's going to be, you know, at the end of the season, he's going to have a quarterback rating that's going to be under 100, and he's going to have his splash plays will be great, and he'll have a couple of like, what was that throw? What was that read? You know, pick sixes. He'll hold the ball too long, which a lot of rookie quarterbacks do. He's going to be a fun player, but there's going to be a lot of mistakes. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
424 total yards, 4 touchdowns for Jackson Dart in the preseason. Look, it's preseason. I get it. I wouldn't say that this has caused me to make any changes in my rankings, Scott. And, you know, like you said, the one guy that we want here is Malik Nabers. I do want to talk about the running back room in a bit, though. But with Malik Nabers, the one thing I at least am thinking about here, again, am I going to make any changes to my rankings, whatever? Probably not. You know, Malik Nabers is a guy who already was a threat to lead the NFL in targets. He had 30% of the Giants' targets last year. Over the last 3 seasons, that's it. Look, 30% is pretty outrageous. Like, you'd love for guys to be at 30%, but it's only happened three other players have done it four other players other than Malik Nabers have done it since 2021. Cooper Kupp did it in 2021. Devontae Adams did it twice in 2022 and 2023. Tyreek Hill did it twice, 2022 and 2023. AJ Brown did it in 23, and Malik Nabers only got to do it last year. Pretty damn good company for Malik Nabers, okay? Like, we already know he has unbelievable elite target earning upside. And I do think that Russell Wilson actually can unlock things in Malik Nabers' game that none of the quarterbacks did last year. Specifically, I've mentioned this stat before. Russell Wilson led all quarterbacks in yards per game on post routes and go routes. And Scott, ain't nobody hitting Malik Nabers on go routes consistently last year. That's for sure. And Malik Nabers, think about all those like slot fades that he ran in the LSU offense, and Jaden Daniels just put it on the money. I remember asking Malik Nabers, like, what's your ideal type of quarterback to play with when I met him at the Super Bowl, and he just pretty much described Jaden Daniels. He was like, yeah, accurate, good ball placement, good leader, mobile, blah, blah. I was like, okay, so you just wish you were still playing with Jaden Daniels. Totally get it. I don't know that Jackson Dart is that guy, and Russell Wilson's definitely not that guy at this stage of his career, but one thing that's also been clear through the preseason is that, oh my God, get this Jackson Dart reminds you of Josh Allen quote off my screen right now. Please, let's be serious here, Herm Edwards. But like, one thing that has been made clear through the preseason, Scott, is that the Giants are running 2 different offenses when Jackson Dart is out there versus when Russell Wilson's out there. And when Jackson Dart is out there, it's a lot of RPOs, get the ball out quick, very similar to the concepts that that Ole Miss ran with Jackson Dart. Again, it's a lot of RPOs, first read stuff. If Malik Nabers is the first read target in an RPO heavy offense, the guy might legitimately have 180, 190 targets. We haven't seen somebody do that since like 2015. But I think Nabers has a good shot to do it. If they're running this like fake RPO offense, I don't know if it's going to be good, but Nabers is just going to get a boatload of targets in that sort of situation.
You know, that final year at LSU for Nabers, for Daniels, for Brian Thomas Jr., they averaged 45.5 points. They still found a way to lose 3 games because their defense couldn't stop anybody. They lost a 55-49 game to Ole Miss. They lost to Alabama and Florida State also. But, you know, sometimes when I need to cleanse my palate, I just pick an LSU team. I'll go back to that Burrow team, or I'll go back to the Jaden Daniels team, both Heisman Trophy winning teams. And, man, wasn't it so much fun last year? We got Jaden Daniels at our price. I know I'm steering this off target, but Nabers is too big to fail. He's one of the 4 or 5 guys who can lead the NFL in targets. And last year, with such a messy quarterback room, he succeeded, and he still wasn't complete on all the nuances of the position. They don't have a very deep wide receiver list. I mean, I mentioned the PPR scam of Wandale Robinson. I like Darius Slayton for what he is. I think he fits a lot of other teams. I think he would have been a good Kansas City Chief. He's still a New York Giant. Jalen Hyatt, who I think won the Biletnikoff a few years ago, but he's never really turned into a pro. And then it just gets uglier after that. Do you want to talk yourself into Theo Johnson? We were talking earlier about tight ends. His name didn't come up. He's maybe a deeper guy, maybe even a waiver wire speed dial guy. But we're always looking for players to pop. He has some fans in New York. Can I talk you into Theo Johnson as somebody to target?
Oh, buddy, you absolutely can. No, he is one of the guys that, like, if I take Jake Ferguson, I want him to be my tight end too. I have Brenton Strange ranked higher, but he's kind of my next, like, probably a little bit more out of nowhere sleeper. This is a guy with all the athleticism that you want. 6'6", over 250 pounds, over 90th percentile in the broad jump. He's got the athletic traits. Like, typically, Scott, we used to think about it when you're just looking for breakout tight ends, you want to go with athleticism and you got to go with opportunity. Theo Johnson is the clear-cut starter at tight end, was actually productive, caught over 20 passes as a rookie, even though he missed time with injuries late in the year. And he, like, had a serious injury and just moonwalked right into back into a starting gig. Like, this team really likes him. He's got all the athletic traits, and it's Wanda Robinson, Darius Slayton, like, guys, we know who they are at the wide receiver position. Like, yeah, absolutely. Give me, like, I got him on one of the Kings Classic teams. I've got him on a lot of teams as, like, a tight end too, man. I'm 100% in on him as a deep, deep sleeper at the tight end position.
Does Jackson Dart, by the way, remind you of anybody? Is there some Jay Cutler in his game? I hate to say this. Sometimes I see a little bit of Drew Lock in his game. The player profile comp, which nobody wants to hear, is Sam Howell, which is not a compliment. But when you watch him play, does anybody come to mind for you?
He's so unique, man. Like, because he does have the tools. He does. I know I'm not the only one to make this comp. I think Daniel Jeremiah might have made this comp, but, like, he is a little bit weirdly on, like, the Jalen Hurts axis of players, where the placement over the middle and the ability to work the middle of the field is questionable. But he really, like, he throws a beautiful ball on a go route. I don't know, there's, like, deep outside the numbers routes, which is really what Jalen Hurts does well. As everybody kind of dunks on Jalen Hurts, they forget that that placement deep outside the numbers is really good. So I think, like, and he's got some mobility to him too. I think that could get him in trouble. It could make him fantasy viable if he gets on the field, but it could also make him a little bit of, like, an injury risk. He already got banged up in the preseason going into the Blue 10 at one point, so he needs to work that out. But yeah, he's got some mobility to him, not in, like, a, hey, he's Justin Fields type way, but in, like, the way that Jalen Hurts can be a kind of, like, a steadying rusher. So that honestly is kind of who he is to me.
I do like that the moment's not too big for him. He's got incredible confidence. He wins the interview room. It's a position where you can't be a shrinking violet. You know, he definitely passes that test. But you're right, he's going to have to learn what open means in the NFL. He's going to have to learn sometimes just discretion is the better part of valor. And you just have to, you know, something that Caleb Williams didn't learn last year, taking all those sacks. You know, sometimes I get the idea Jackson Dart, when he first comes into a game, is going to want to take on the entire 11 defenders, you know, and take on linebackers and seek out contact. And he's going to have to learn that, you know, just slide, run out of bounds. You'll live to fight another day. It's perfectly reasonable.
All right, buddy, let's get into your third storyline here. The old New York Giants quarterback. And yeah, you need to take this because I'm on the clock right now in a draft. So I'm about to make the fifth pick overall. I'm not taking Danny Dimes, but go ahead and riff on the new Colts starting quarterback.
Right, yeah. What can cleanse your palate after talking all that New York Giants offensive football? Indianapolis Colts, Daniel Jones. And we're going to damn him with faint praise, right? We're excited about Daniel Jones because it's not Anthony Richardson. He's got an idea of how to play quarterback in the NFL. He's got more experience. He should keep this offense more on schedule, matriculate the ball down the field, as Hank Schramm used to say, higher octane. Richardson made splash plays, but just not enough first downs. They couldn't keep the offense on the field. So I don't know who it's going to be great for, if it's going to be Tyler Warren, the tight end, if it's going to be Michael Pittman, their nominal number one receiver. Josh Downs definitely has his fans. Jonathan Taylor, you would think, would be helped if the offense overall is better. And although Jones is mobile, he's not as mobile as Richardson. So it's just a blanket upgrade to me for all these guys. I think the player I probably warmed up to the most is Ty Warren, who, man, you catch 103 passes in college, you've done some things. And he was used so creatively at Penn State. He was even used as a runner at times. A physical player could maybe be that specialty guy for that. The Colts, they don't need him with Taylor necessarily, but, you know, somebody if they want to use as a short yardage change of pace now and then. But I'm open to the idea that maybe Warren might be ready for 75 or 80 catches out of the gate. Michael Pittman's ADP was so depressed, and he was like an afterthought. He was just left. He was like, you know, the library was getting rid of books, and there was just like a table, just take this book, and nobody wanted the Michael Pittman book. And now I think we're back to, no, people want the Michael Pittman book. He was a good receiver at USC. He had a nice trajectory going in the NFL. I think what's bumped him offline has been poor quarterback play, some bad luck with injuries, at times some coaching fits that haven't made sense. And you can still draft Michael Pittman as a bench player. You can draft him as somebody who can pop for you, or, you know, you reevaluate in October if things haven't worked out. But I'm not trying to sell you on Daniel Jones is great, but he's, you know, if one option is bad and one option is mediocre, give me the mediocre option. I know it's not much of an endorsement, but I have upgraded the Colts significantly since this news came down. And I think fantasy managers should follow suit.
Like what is significantly to you, Scott? Cause I'm still having trouble getting excited about this at all.
Well, it's just, Richardson, he couldn't make the proper read and proper throw on third and five, right? He couldn't. So many games you'd see a Richardson game and they'd have 12 first downs and be like, oh yeah, look at the three best throws he made. And they'd be great. You know, he'd throw a nice high point deep pass. He'd throw a long touchdown. He'd make a play with his legs. But then he'd take a sack he had no right taking. He'd airmail a guy on a wide open throw. You know, and I don't think Daniel Jones was that bad. I think at times the Giants failed him when he was there. And it's just such a hard place to survive if things take the slightest step in the wrong direction. Ask Sam Darnold about that. I still think Daniel Jones can be a capable NFL starter. I thought he was, you know, remember Minnesota kicked the tires on him. He was there for a little bit. So maybe some of the Kevin O'Connell wisdom as he went through the drive-through will wear off on him. We're going to find out also a lot of coordinators, a lot of head coaches who run offenses, Mike McDaniel, Brian Daboll with the Giants, Shane Steichen in Indianapolis. Is he next 10 years coach, next 5 years coach, or is he filling out applications at the end of the year? This is a make or break year for him. And I think he had to pick Daniel Jones, but weren't you at a point that you just didn't have any trust in Anthony Richardson? Cause that's where I was at.
Oh, absolutely. I that's where the coaching staff was at. And I think the coaching staff was there at the end of last year. I think they were absolutely there once he got himself lit up in the preseason. I think that was it. I think that was the moment it was over for Anthony Richardson. I like Nate's point that we just showed there about, hey, this is, you know, like Josh Downs could benefit from that that play style of the bootlegs, the choice routes and stuff like that. At the same time, I got to make another damn pick here. Oh my God. Hey, Scott, should I take Jonathan Taylor or Chase Brown? I'm going to take Chase Brown. I haven't taken Chase Brown yet this year. I think I'm going to do it.
I'm fine with that. I mean, when in doubt, bet on the ecosystem, right? I mean, you know, it's a Joe Burrow or Daniel Jones comp. I think Burrow's going to win that one. And I know Brown's only done it once, but man, he never came off the field last year. They're so concentrated.
Oh boy. This is a tough one. I think I'm gonna do. Yeah, I'll just take Chase. What
league are you drafting for?
I'm just gonna.
What league is this?
It's like it's a league with our bosses of some execs. So I can't be embarrassed.
Oh, Muckety Muck League. Okay, you can't lose to those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, I took CeeDee Lamb at five.
I know you were friendly with all them in Las Vegas, Matt. But this is for blood. You got to beat these guys.
You know, you're right. I took Chase Brown at 20, and I took CeeDee Lamb at five. I was really hoping to get Puka or Josh Jacobs at that pick, but they went right before me. So anyways, back to the topic at hand. There, I think you could kind of talk yourself into like any of these Colts players with the Daniel Jones stuff. Like, I mentioned this when we did the contingent value stuff episode a few weeks ago was that last week? I don't know. A lot of like RPOs are coming with this Daniel Jones offense. Michael Pittman was seventh in first read target share on that very RPO heavy Gardner Minshew offense. The year that he started in 2023, is that like a Michael Pittman thing? Is Tyler Warren the new guy there? The problem is, Scott, and this is why I really struggle to get excited about any of these players, is I just feel like all three of those guys sort of kind of live in they don't play the same roles. They're different and they're all good, but they all kind of live in the same area of the field. And I just don't trust Daniel Jones. Like, I agree with you. There were times where Daniel Jones was intriguing. He did have that good 2022 season, even if it was smoke and mirrors. But he's so physically compromised since then. He's had a lot of injuries. ACL, neck, like the throwing motion, the power is not really there with him anymore. He's not accessing Alec Pierce. He's not accessing A.D. Mitchell. So I agree with you. And I think the floor is probably higher. Like with Anthony Richardson, there's always like a, hey, this thing is going to bottom out type perspective. And I'm not one of these guys that like wants to cape up for Anthony Richardson. Like he played himself out of that job and he ultimately like just wasn't professional enough. And maybe they failed him by throwing him out there too early. Like maybe they should have started Gardner Minshew in his rookie season. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube on that one. That was also years ago now at this point. So I do think the floor is probably better, but man, I'm having trouble like getting any level of rejoicement over these Colts pass catchers with Danny Dimes in the mix.
By the way, there's no way they didn't schedule this draft knowing that you'd be in a podcast. That was done intentionally. They're trying to keep Matt Harmon.
I said,
under
by the
wraps.
Way, I said that. I said that when they're like, let's schedule the draft. It's like, well, all these times you've thrown out, I'm going to be hosting your live show because I do that every day of the week.
I'm definitely getting screwed on this one. Trying to sabotage the Matt Harmon experience. They probably have like a one wide receiver setting because they know if they had like three or four that you would dominate in that area. So don't let them push you around.
You're right.
Michael Pittman vibes?
I did think he's a good contingent value player because Josh Downs is currently banged up. What if Tyler Warren misses time? Then yeah, Michael Pittman is going to dominate targets there. So I've taken him as like a wide receiver five at times because I do think there's a good projectable floor with him. Yeah, and like Pittman's a good player, man. This is what I'm saying. Like Pittman's a good player. Downs in any other situation, I would think has like top 20 upside at the wide receiver position. By the way, you can tell me I'm being a hypocrite because I'm kind of coming back on this situation is really ambiguous. It's really crowded. And I'm like, hey, draft into the Packers. I know they're crowded. Draft into it. Jags backfield. Draft into it. Don't care if it's crowded. So am I being a hypocrite on this? Because to me, it does come back to just, I think those are going to be good offenses. And I think this is going to be a bad offense.
Well, it's you drafted to the Packers because we like Matt LaFleur. We like Jordan Love. Draft into the Jaguars because Liam Cohen has been a miracle worker. And it's too early to say that Trevor Lawrence can't be great. But maybe there just isn't enough of that tailwind with the Colts. And, you know, when I look at this wide receiver room, I like to play that parlor game. Can we trade this guy to the Bills? Can we trade this guy to the Chiefs? Right? I mean, wouldn't you love Josh Downs, you know, with Josh Allen?
Oh, my God,
wouldn't you love
Michael
Pittman with Patrick Mahomes? You know, it doesn't work that way. Although maybe if the Colts bottom out and those teams still have a need in the middle of the season, maybe a trade can happen. Let me put you on the spot. I talked about Steichen. It's kind of a show. Put up or shut up, you know, show me year for him. Is Shane Steichen the coach of the Indianapolis Colts for 2026?
You know, Scott, back in March when they signed Daniel Jones and said, hey, we're going to have a quarterback competition between Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson, my first thought was, okay, well, tell me how this doesn't end with both these guys making starts and everybody getting fired at the end of the year. And since then, they've also drafted Riley Leonard. He might be in the mix. Also, I know it's tough to talk about, but Jim Irsay passed away. That adds ambiguity into the situation, too, like new ownership here. They might not like his daughters who are in charge of the team might not love the Chris Ballard experience. I think this ends up with both these guys make starts and everybody gets fired at the end of the year, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it looks like a 7-10, 8-9, you know, 7-10, I think is what the Colts are going to be.
Yeah. At best, by the way, at best, I think that's what they end up being. All right. We are going to take yet another break. We come back. We're going to go to the NFC West and talk about two situations where there's a lot of murkiness, both behind center and in the skill position rooms, at least for each of these two different teams, right after this quick break. All right, we are back. We're continuing to run through preseason, last month's storylines that you need to know before you head into your draft. Update on my draft, because, you know, everybody definitely cares about that. I took Amarian Hampton in the third round prior to, while we were right before we hit break there. So got to adjust the ranks. I took him over, you know, some wide receivers there. But anyways, feeling pretty good about it. Okay. I will say my next storyline is, Scott, the 49ers skill position players are kind of a mess right now. have you seen some of the names the 49ers cut today? It's like, Robbie Chosen Anderson, you know, Russell Gage, Isaiah Hodgins. That's the dudes they've been cycling through. Sky Moore. They traded a like a draft pick swap to get Sky Moore in the building. Like, we're showing the depth chart on the screen right now. Brandon Ayuk, he's not playing to start the season. Juwan Jennings, he might not be out there to start the season. There's some reports that he might get put on IR because of this calf injury. Who are the 49ers lining up at wide receiver outside of Ricky Pearsall? Is Ricky Pearsall about to average 10 targets per game in the first month of the season? And Scott, I think this also comes back to, you've mentioned George Kittle. What are your thoughts on George Kittle right now? Because I've seen a lot of other fantasy analysts get extremely excited about the George Kittle stuff and the target ceiling for him. But man, he's just not a guy that's ever dominated targets. How are we feeling about Kittle as a guy that other analysts are definitely really wanting to push up the board right now?
Would you believe he's my tight end one right now? And he actually has been for a while. I think this is the year Kittle finally gets 120, 125 targets. He has to. Look, it breaks my heart. I've been on the Juwan Jennings train all summer. I talked about him a lot at Vegas, and I've tried to play off the calf as no big deal. Maybe it's part of a negotiating ploy, the contract. But now Shanahan's talking about maybe he'll play week one, maybe he won't. We still have that bad taste in our mouth from last year with the way the whole McCaffrey situation. Oh, yeah, he's going to play. And then no. You know, Jordan Mason knew all along he was going to play. Mason played great. Let the cat out of the bag in the postgame interview, you know, because Kyle Shanahan's a great coach, but you're lucky he'll concede there's a game on Sunday and what time the game is, let alone let us know what the personnel is going to be. So you, I think all along, we're giving people the right advice. That
I like that you've moved that quote from Bill Belichick now to just to Kyle Shanahan. It's what you always used to say about Bill Belichick, but I think Shanahan's deserves the new title.
And they, you know, Belichick and the Shanahan family have always been close, and it was no big surprise that when Belichick felt like he had to trade Garoppolo to placate Tom Brady once upon a time, that he traded him to San Francisco. I mean, that's back when people thought Jimmy Garoppolo could play. Now we're all petrified that he might have to play for the Rams this year, and we'll get to them at the end of our show. But I think you've been right all along with the Pearsall stuff. I capitulate, to use the Adam Levitan and Evan Silva you know, ethos there. I can't draft Jennings now confidently. I'm probably overinvested in him anyway. So at this point, I'm just hoping he comes back healthy whenever he comes back. And I don't even think an IR spot. I'm talking myself. This sounds crazy. I'm talking myself into maybe going on IR would be good. Get healthy. Come back. You already know the plays. But George Kittle is going to have a career high in targets. I want you to write that in ink. And Ricky Pearsall is in part because he was mispriced for so long. But even now, the price is downright reasonable. Brock Purdy's good. Kyle Shanahan's smart coach. Ricky Pearsall is going to beat or smash his ADP.
I love it. Yeah, again, I think there's a chance he could go double-digit targets like early this season. Oh, boy. I got to make a draft pick here. Okay, done. That was terrible. Anyways, I think that
– I didn't know. Forget the Niners. Who'd you take? You're at the point where none of the wide receivers, they all look the same. You, it's flat. So you're like, well, let's get a difference maker.
It was him or Garrett Wilson. And like, it's the fourth round. That's actually decent for Garrett Wilson, better than taking him in the third. But I have Joe Burrow ranked a little higher overall. So I went Joe Burrow there.
You can find the receiver you take in round five or round six is probably no worse than 40-60 to beat Garrett Wilson anyway.
It's a good point.
Garrett Wilson. Let's just be reasonable with Fields.
Same. You know what, though? Hey, I got Chase Brown. I got Joe Burrow. I got access to all the Bengals touchdowns this year. How about that, Scott?
Look at you. Look at you with your little bit Bengals, pseudo stack.
Bengals super stack. Yeah,
so when Samaje Perine is punching him in, you'll be sad. But no, it's not.
Oh, how dare you? How dare you? Don't even say that. Anyways, back to the 49ers. No, Ricky Pearsall, a guy I continue to push up my rankings. I want you, if you're listening to this show, if you're watching this show, I want you to draft Ricky Pearsall. At this point, we showed the tweet from my buddy James Coe there. The other guys, like the guys that are actually currently on the roster right now, DeMarcus Robinson is suspended for the first three games. He was supposed to start for Brandon Ayuk, who's on IR. He was supposed to start for him at the X receiver position, suspended for three games. Jordan Watkins was a rookie getting popped, high ankle sprain. Jacob Cowan got hurt twice this offseason. He's on IR. Again, all these other dudes have been cut. It's just crazy the state of this position right now. Pearsall is so good. He has Brock Purdy's trust. I want you to basically take all those like per route metrics and throw them out. And I want you to draft the hell out of Ricky Pearsall. I want you to talk. Now let's talk about the backfield here, Scott.
Hang on, Kyle Shanahan.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Draft the hell out of Ricky Pearsall. You got to give people some framework. What round, 12 team league, say, of certain competitiveness, when should Ricky Pearsall be your guy?
65th overall is where I have him right now. So I have, that's like high wide receiver 30s. His ADP on Yahoo is still like in the 80s. Yeah. So I think he's a sixth round pick. I don't think you have to take him in the sixth round. I think he could be in the seventh round. But yeah, like all of those guys, he's a guy that I would take over Cortland Sutton, who we just talked about earlier. Like I know what Cortland Sutton is. But I also think maybe this is arrogance, overconfidence. I also think I know who Ricky Pearsall is. And like, am I attaching myself to the wide receiver one of the Broncos or the Niners? I think I want to attach myself to the wide receiver one of the 49ers. And look at that runway that we just talked about. Like Ricky Pearsall, the runway has been cleared for this guy, Scott.
I'm not going to go that far. I'm a Sutton guy, but I did move, and maybe because I've been spending too much time with you this month, but I did move Pearsall as we speak up to my wide receiver 30. So that's a pretty strong endorsement, I think.
I think that's definitely a strong endorsement. What did you feel about the Kyle Shanahan comments about Brian Robinson? Like, yeah, we just took him to be our number two running back, like plain and simple. Isaac Garendo, I guess, is going to be a special teamer.
Right. So I want producer Colin to take whatever nice things we said about Garendo on the contingency value pod and just put that where nobody can ever hear it again. You know, when you talk about, so Robinson joins the team, all the injuries in the offense, the receivers. This is a team where I'm like, you know what they really need is a week 5 bye. And I looked at their schedule. You know when their bye week is? Week 14, man. I mean, this team, the Seahawks, Saints, Cardinals, Jaguars, it's actually not a bad opening slate. And then they get the Rams and Buccaneers. It gets a little harder in October. But a lot of times we see the first couple of weeks of the season are dress rehearsals, and they look like preseason games because teams have pulled back so much from their starters in the preseason. Some teams, like the Rams, don't even use their starters at all. I think it's going to be a slow push for the Niners. They're going to be like 2-2, and they're going to be like 19th or 20th in DVOA on offense. And we're going to be like, okay, what's going on? Brock Purdy's trying to find something he can trust. And Kittle will be that guy, and Pearsall will be that guy, but you need more than that. And do you have the stones to draft Christian McCaffrey? He, 7 years, he's been a smash 4 years, and he's wrecked your team 3 years. Which season is it this year? The wide range of ADP outcomes on McCaffrey, too. Don't love the offensive line. So I think this is a team that Shanahan will figure it out, just like Belichick would figure it out, just like Sean Payton will figure it out. The best offensive coaches are going to be better in the second half of the year than the first half of the year when they know what they have, when they've massaged an offensive line that has holes, when they've found right answers on a wide receiver room that's been beaten up by injury and even a suspension with Robinson, who, as you mentioned, was going to be a player for them. But this, I guess the takeaway, and I hate to say this, I'm a Brock Purdy guy, and I was excited when he got signed, and I was excited to draft Jennings, which I've backed off now. And I think Brock Purdy has to move down my list. He's no longer, I was actually fine with him as my quarterback one or my high end quarterback two. And I just think there's too much personnel missing here for me to start him confidently in the first month of the season.
All right, well, that's a good transition to our final point here, which is quarterback in the same division that I think if you haven't paid attention to football over the last month, I'd be surprised if you have missed the news about Matthew Stafford and him trending through an injury here, the back injury, Scott. So again, I think people understand like the deal with Stafford. He's dealt with this back injury. He's missed time in practice. He spent time in the immortal chamber, whatever that is, or immortal chamber. I don't know. So Scotty, what's the practical application here with this Stafford injury? He's going to start week one, but obviously the concern is the duration of the season. How have you been approaching these Rams players, Puka Nacua, Devonta Adams, and even Kyren Williams? Talk about Kyren Williams too, because he's somebody that doesn't get brought up in this whole Rams discussion here.
First of all, let me do the easiest part first. You can stop drafting Matthew Stafford. He's been quarterback 19 and quarterback 15 the last 2 years in the Sean McVay offense. And they have not – I realize that Puka Nacua is a great football player, but 3 touchdowns last year, 1 catch inside the 10-yard line, a lot of injury time last year, a lot of injury time from Nacua in college. Stafford's 37, back problem, didn't do much in the preseason. And again, the Rams, they kind of have a different idea what the summer's about anyway, but reps matter. So really simple for me. I'm not drafting Stafford. Okay, fine. You have a million quarterback right answers. You know, it's a New York subway system. There's a train coming every 5 minutes. We're not going to sweat quarterback. I'm not drafting Puka Nacua. When you were talking about Puka in your draft, I'm glad he didn't land at your number two slot because he hasn't been a touchdown guy. They brought in Devontae Adams, put on this earth to score touchdowns. They extend Kyren Williams, who's their goal line guy, you know, inside the five, you know, first and goal at the two. It's Williams territory. So I don't think Nacua gets anywhere close to double-digit touchdowns. It's a leap of faith for me to get him there with Adams there now, with Stafford a question mark. I don't want to see Jimmy Garoppolo playing again. I know McVay is somebody that we like to bet on, but man, this strikes me as a very average team with a quarterback probably on the back nine who's going to come out slow, with a new receiver in Adams who's in his 30s, a player in Nacua injury history, hasn't scored touchdowns, don't love the offensive line. I know they were a playoff team last year, and they looked good in the playoffs for a moment. They even gave the Eagles a little bit of a scare, but I think the Rams missed the playoffs this year, probably under 500, and I have not drafted this offense proactively at all.
Yeah, again, it's week one is not in question for Stafford. It's, is he going to be there in week 10? Is he going to be there in week 16? You know, after he takes a hit in week one from Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson, is he going to be there after that? Like, these are the questions you have to ask yourself with Matthew Stafford. And like, ultimately, I have moved Puka Nacua down my rankings. He's in the second round for me now. He would have been a first round pick. I think, Scott, you might have just been lower on him to begin with. But Devontae Adams is a guy that I've also moved to the bottom of his tier, just taking other positions really where he's going. And then Kyren Williams, again, just wanted to touch on him really quickly. He is a guy that has had to live off of touchdowns from a fantasy football perspective. If this offense is captained by Jimmy Garoppolo, do we think they're going to be scoring as many touchdowns? I do not. So that's where I'm caught up on the Kyren Williams stuff and why, again, I've moved like Amarian Hampton ahead of him, certainly Chase Brown and these type of other guys as well.
Yeah, a big drop off in Williams' success rate last year, a big drop off in his yards per carry. He's nothing special as a receiver, right? But 4.6 yards per target, which is nothing, 182 receiving yards. So he needs the touchdown deodorant. Now he's gotten a lot of that, 26 rushing touchdowns the last 2 years and 5 receiving touchdowns. So I think 10 is probably a starting point for Williams, but he's not, I think he's living right with the way he's been utilized and the fact that McVay's been such a one back guy. One question you have to ask yourself when you look at the Rams is that, is Blake Corum a write off? Is Jarquez Hunter, who some people are believers in him, can he push for maybe this a 70-30, even an 80-20 backfield, because it's been the Williams show the last two seasons? If you draft Williams, it has to be a bet on volume because the efficiency was so ordinary last year, and he never had dynamic measurables, right? The whole idea was that he can play in all packages, he's never going to hurt you, and then he gets goal line opportunity and there's nobody behind him. Are all those things still true in his fourth season? Honestly, I'm not sure. And so I'm not saying he's a hard fade for me, but a lot of times when I get to the Williams part of the draft, I find myself looking at the other guy, and that ends up being the player I pick.
I think that's ultimately how I've gone about it as well. We got to get out of here. Just last update on my draft, Scotty. I took Ricky Pearsall, 67th overall, just because I am a man of my word, even over some other players that I have him ranked higher than. Did it just because I said it on the show. So never let anyone say that Matt Harmon is not a man of principle. But that is going to do it for today's show. Before we go, if you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe to the new YouTube channel. The growth engagement has been awesome so far this month, and we are super appreciative of it. Let's just keep this thing going into September and all the way through the football season. And speaking of the football season, your draft season is right now. It is happening. Just made a pick in the middle of this promo, baby. That is because we are nonstop going here. Yahoo Fantasy Plus is 28% off for the 28th year of Yahoo Fantasy from now until September 7th. That's the first Sunday of the NFL season. 28% off your first year annual subscription. This is valid for U.S. customers only. This subscription will auto-renew at full price. Offer ends at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, September 7th. Cram Week continues to roll on here on the podcast tomorrow. Justin Boone joins me to identify the players that we are worried we might be wrong about. Yes, we're confident in our rankings, but where might we be a little less confident about some of the things we're saying? All that is coming up tomorrow. That is going to be live at 5 p.m. Eastern on this very YouTube channel on Wednesday. Until then, we are out.